Well, this is Dr. Stan here back at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. We need reminders of the views that are expressed here and not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, of course, our guest this afternoon is Mr. Edward Timberlake. Mr. Timberlake is a graduate of the Naval Academy. He was a Marine, a pilot, and of course, he served in the military. He's been with the Pentagon. He's worked in government service. But he and a man named Jed Babin, who was Deputy Secretary of Defense, during the first Bush administration, have written a fascinating book called Showdown, going into really what's going on as far as China is concerned. We seem to be so concerned about the fact that, you know, Iran may be developing nuclear weapons or may be enriching uranium so that they can build nuclear weapons, but we're unconcerned about the fact that China not only has nuclear weapons, but has threatened to nuke our cities. Mr. Timberlake, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, sir. It's an honor to be on your show.
We had you one time before on one of your other books, and we always enjoy it. Now, certainly, why don't you tell us why you and Mr. Babin are so concerned about this? Because, you know, the average individual doesn't give this a thought. Our president certainly doesn't seem to think there's much to worry about. We're doing everything we can to finance Red China, to build up their military technology, to transfer literally billions or hundreds of billions of dollars to them, not only in our trade deficit, but our banks are investing over there billions of dollars, and our industries are investing billions of dollars, and we're guaranteed, I think, $5 or $6 billion so that they can build up their nuclear plants over there. And yet you're saying there's a danger of our going to war with communist China?
Yes, sir, I am. I'd like to put it in context for your listeners. I was giving a lecture at Gettysburg College. My sister happens to teach there. And I was talking about the previous book, and a professor from the People's Republic of China was in the audience, a guest professor. And he challenged me when I was talking about the actual issue you're talking about, which is the evolution of nuclear weapons between the countries. And I stopped it and I said, well, why do I feel uncomfortable? I said, well, because we're the good guys and you're the bad guys. And that was very shallow and simplistic on my part. I was corrected by a Gettysburg professor after that who came to me and said, Ed, you didn't handle that correctly. The way you really should look at it is, America has a very good system of government with good and bad people in it. China has a very bad system of government with good and bad citizens. So that takes a sting out of me picking a fight unilaterally and across the board with 1.3 billion Chinese citizens. That's not our focus. Our focus is to track, look at, analyze, and try and figure out, if anyone can, what the People's Liberation Army generals and the Politburo have as far as capabilities and intentions for first their part of the world and then perhaps even pushing across the date line into our world, which they're already doing in Central and South America.
But, of course, the point you make is that they really intend that one day they're going to have a war with America. Wouldn't that be a fair statement?
Very fair. I hate to say anything's inevitable because, quite frankly, having been the director of mobilization for Secretary Weinberger and President Reagan, we did deter the Soviet Empire, and they wound up in the ash heap of history. So America, by standing tall, not sending bad signals, by focusing on our military capabilities, can deter war with China.
Hold that thought for just a moment, if you would, please. We'll be right back.
Absolutely.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Mr. Edward Timberlake, and he and a man named Jeff Babin have written a book called Showdown. Now, Mr. Babin was apparently the Deputy Secretary of Defense in one of the previous administrations. Was that the first Bush administration?
Yes, it was. He was a Deputy Undersecretary of Defense.
All right, fine. And that is one of the key people in the Defense Department. And, of course, Mr. Timberlake has, you know, was a graduate of the Naval Academy and a Marine a pilot. And, of course, he's worked in a number of key positions in government. And they've written a book trying to warn the American people that we have a very real threat of a war with communist China. And the most incredible thing is it would almost appear that the current administration is doing everything they can to build up their military capability. Do you have that feeling?
Well, I am an author. I'm speaking for myself, and there's a disclaimer in the book. I really honestly believe that Secretary Rumsfeld has it just right on China. The Defense Department, he has asked on his swing through Asia the exact right question. We, the American military and our administration and the American people, demand transparency. Why is China building up this tremendous military force, when I will challenge anyone within listening distance of my voice, there are no natural enemies to the People's Republic of China. There's not a single country in the world that would awaken one day and say, hey, let's attack China. So you have to filter what they're doing through the prism of why. And the question I and my co-author have come to is that they recognize with the expansion of their military might and the danger of their people creating unrest and discontent, that the leaders in Beijing have a serious problem because they are building an industrial base, which you've talked about, and very frankly, our industry and our entrepreneurs are not necessarily the most helpful people in the world. I have no problem with global trade. I have no problem with wheat and Beanie Babies. We want to send them wheat and we buy Beanie Babies, fine. Where I draw the line very strongly is the dual-use military and military equipment. What do I mean by that? And I'm talking probably to some very clever, capable, very wealthy Silicon Valley and entrepreneurs. And there has to be a moment of shame where people can look in the mirror and say, my gosh, we've created search engines, we've created the Internet, we've created links to cell phones, and we think we're doing the right thing, and we are as a country. It's a wonderful innovation in America. But when those devices wind up in the hands of the People's Republic of China, they turn into tools of oppression.
Hold that thought for just a moment. Edward, we'll be right back here with our station. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Mr. Edward Timberlake, and we're talking about their book, Showdown, and we actually carry the book. We think it's going to be an important book. It's subtitled, Why China Wants War with the United States. Let me repeat that. Why China wants war with the United States. And they're preparing for war with the United States. They've even talked about nuclear cities. They could lose 300 million people, and it wouldn't bother them at all because they're materialists. They don't care about human life. What would happen if America lost 100 million people? And I'm sure you've asked that question, Mr. Timberlake.
Yes, in fact, that was my job for Secretary Weinberger, as I said, and President Reagan. I was the director of mobilization planning and requirements during the height of the Cold War, and we were very concerned. You framed this question perfectly. The terrorists and you know, they are the meanest, vicious, damn them. They can strike a blow against America and do terrible damage to a city, a second city, perhaps. We're trying to stop them. But the People's Republic of China, in one fell swoop, have the ability now, and they're getting better at it, to totally destroy America as a national entity. God forbid something happened to one of our cities. We have a constitution, we have resilient people, and we rebuild our society. I used to worry about that at the height of the Cold War. If the People's Republic of China threat nukes, and you're exactly right, they've had two very dramatic and direct and very blunt statements to America about the use of WMD. The first one was when in the 90s, when we put two carriers in the middle of the Taiwan Straits to try and deter them from plopping missiles around a free and fair election in Taiwan. And mind you, the Chinese people are very capable of embracing democracy. Taiwan is a beacon of that. They had a switch from one party to another in a democratic election, first time in 5,000 years of Chinese history that happened. Well, what happened at that moment was one of the commanding generals gave to one of our former ambassadors a signal. He said, would the Americans be prepared to trade Taipei for L.A.? And the gentleman went back to him and said, you can't really mean that. He says, oh, yes, we do. So that was the first signal that just they may be signaling that their military would think that way. That's very bad. The second one was very recent. It happened within the last year, in which they have looked at our tremendous military, and you did introduce me correctly. I was a Naval Academy graduate. I was a Marine fighter pilot, commanding officer of a Marine Reserve Squadron. So I have a lot of hours in the air, and I tried to stop the Khmer Rouge in my youth. In how we maneuver our forces and how we take out objectives and how we can vanquish enemies. The commanding general of the People's Liberation Army War College, in responding to our high-tech conventional capabilities, said, well, if we do something in Taiwan, because you Americans, I'm paraphrasing now very generally, if you Americans try something, we may have to resort to nukes. Now, that is something that has crossed a threshold. In the old days, to remind everyone closer to my age, there was something called MAD, or Mutually Assured Destruction. And very bluntly, the Soviet Empire, as harsh as they could be, understood that if anyone resorted to an exchange, it would be deadly and devastating. So, in a sense, we were scorpions in a bottle, to use the old cliche, and then President Reagan, very bluntly, took them down, and they collapsed, and there's great freedom in the world. Well, the People's Republic of China and their second artillery, their strategic missile force, is upgrading their capabilities. Some of the stuff in the old 90s, and during the 90s, the Loral case, and fixing what they call kick motors to position, quote, satellites, is also the same technology that allows them to put what they call MIRVs, or multiple warheads, in orbit and drop them off over American cities. So in a strange and ugly way, a lot of the American industrial base has been used, and people have paid a price for this. I mean, they didn't do it. Some of them did it because the spy cases, and others did it with their eyes wide open. But we have helped them, and we've helped them in a very dangerous way perfect their accuracy and the lift and the reliability of their strategic rocket forces. That is a very nasty thing to happen, because we don't wish them ill, but they have now, as I've said, and I'll stand behind this, threatened us twice with an attack.
Well, let me ask you a question, because this has always puzzled me. Certainly we know that during the Clinton administration, Bill Clinton ordered the release of the technology that allowed the Chinese communists to accurately MIRV their missiles. And, of course, the excuse is given, well, he got a couple of $100,000 in campaign contributions. Now, if he did it for campaign contributions, he should have been tried for prison, and he should be rotting in prison today. Of course, nothing was done to him, but why would Bill Clinton do that? He's not a stupid man.
No, he's not. And I actually had the case. I was on the Committee on Rules, and I was the principal national security staffer, and a fellow with me in the committee as a staffer, we both drew up the articles to vote the Cox Committee in. It was passed by Congress, and Congressman Chris Cox, Californian, who's now the SEC chairman, investigated this. And the issue was very simply blinders, moral blinders. The quest for campaign dollars, the for sale sign was put out, and having investigated a lot of the cases, I don't think anyone really cared about the consequences of what was happening as long as ultimate victory was achieved.
But, of course, we're talking about the potential death of 50 or 100 million Americans.
I think that they had moral blinders on, and they didn't even, that was not in part of their equation. I'm not going to accuse anyone of killing or threatening to kill 100 million Americans. What I'm going to say is that the moral fabric of the consequences of their action I found lacking. And I wrote a book called Dear the Rat, which laid out a very convincing case.
In fact, we actually carried that book.
They very convincing case that they sold out American high tech for campaign contributions. Slam dunk. There are 650 endnotes. No one has ever touched our research, and it's true. The People's Republic of China saw an opportunity, and they took it. They were writing checks and delivering to the White House. They were putting, this is an unbelievable story, and I thought, 1 second, I'll tell it. They had a gentleman named Ung Lap Sing. He owned a house of prostitution in Macau. True story. He did not speak English. How did I find that out? I talked to ABC reporters that tried to interview him. He wound up carrying hundreds of thousands of dollars out of Macau. He was also a triad gangster and a Communist Party member, carrying hundreds of thousands of dollars into America. How do I know that? He signed for it. To remind your listeners, if you cross our border with more than $10,000 in your pocket, you better declare it, or you'll be accused of some very ugly crimes. So he declared the money, fine, legal, you can do that. But he wound up within 2 to 3 days in the residence of the White House. Now, I'll challenge any of your listeners. Have you ever walked out of, say, your sitting room into your living room, bumped into a fellow that doesn't speak English? I mean, the mind was boggled by the individuals that knocked on the door with checks in hand, delivering them to the White House, and walking away with deals cut. And the consequences we from those days, the 90s, we're seeing now with more advanced PRC, People's Republic of China, Army, Navy, and Air Force weapon systems, command and control systems, communication systems. One other issue for your listeners, and they really should focus on this. When Tiananmen, the 17th anniversary just passed a couple of days ago, by the way, when Tiananmen broke out, it scared and shook the ruling leaders in China to their core. It was a watershed. They decided that they could not tolerate student democracy. Lady Liberty was that, very similar to the Statue of Liberty. So they machine-gunned the kids, and when the parents came to collect the bodies, they machine-gunned the parents. That's a true story. That was reported by very liberal reporters, and the comment was made, there was no longer any liberal reporters left to report favorably on China. If you were in Tiananmen, you were given a cold dose of reality very quickly. But what is not known, and I just interviewed a person who left Tiananmen and got out, and I just bumped into this person a couple days ago, because in Washington, you kind of meet people, and she pointed out that approximately over 400 cities, in addition to Beijing, had trouble with students and riots. That tells me that if America awakens and keeps our military force growing, and I believe this administration is very good on that point, that we have a hope and a prayer that the underground church movement, for example, the Falun Gong, perhaps, or just the human heart quest for freedom, will scare the rulers in Beijing so that they'll have a peaceful tear down this wall. I'm speaking metaphorically, of course. But if not, maybe, just maybe, most Chinese dynasties are overthrown by the royal farmers, what they call peasants at times, who have had enough. Very bluntly, even though there's a mercantile class, a middle class, who is buying now top flight scotch and cars and furs and watches, there still is an impoverished class out in the Chinese hinterland who I think are really starting to look very askance at their quality of life, the thuggish nature of a police state. To remind your listeners, how do I prove it's a police state? Well, there's two very ugly things that should shock everyone to their core. And I know your listening audience is on, you know, where you are. And it's, you know, I love Monterey. It's a beautiful place. I just was a student at the Naval Post Graduate School in aviation safety. I mean, I just absolutely love your area. And I know that a lot of people in Santa Cruz and all that would probably listen to me askance. But ABC News, Brian Ross, an investigative journalist, a very capable journalist, found out that the People's Republic of China have now created a new industry. And what it is it's killing dissidents and criminals and harvesting their organs. And there's 60,000 cases of this. This is Orwellian horror that people should really take exception to.
Well, I think there are a lot of things that are going on over there in China that we should be concerned about. And this total lack of the opportunity for freedom. But what really bothers me is that President Hu was here in the United States not too long ago, and of course was feasted by the president. Maybe he didn't have an official government dinner, but he certainly was given a great deal of coverage. And why he would take a thug like that and allow him to come to America and of course use that to build up his prestige at home, to give the feeling of people in China the idea that there just is sort of really no hope, because the Americans are going right along with the ruthless rulers of China. Well, there are a lot of unanswered questions. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Edward Timberlake, and of course, we're talking about his book, Showdown. Now, one of the things that you mentioned in your book is that the people in China, the People's Republic of China, is actually intimately associated with the whole world Islamic terrorist movement, is working with Islamic terrorists throughout the world and helping and financing them and working in Zimbabwe to keep that ruthless thug Mugabe in power, and working in Angola and really working in the Sudan. And I even suspect they played a part in this recent defeat of the West in Somalia. What's your take on the fact that we're supposedly at war with terrorism, And we're doing everything we can, of course, in many ways, to lend money to Communist China, and they're helping fund the terrorists. That doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't, and you're exactly right. I guess it's the cliche that, you know, an enemy of, you know, an enemy is a friend. They do have a Islamic issue on their western province, but they're Fetish. I mean, to remind your listeners, again, I will quote the far left on some of this stuff. The French government did a book, not the government, excuse me, the French intellectuals wrote a book called The Black Book of Communism. These were hardcore French intellectuals, no friend of America, who decided they would look at who, what dictators over time did the worst hit on humanity. Mao Zedong led the league, 60 to 70 million. French came up with that. So we know for a fact that the Chinese leadership is not beyond going after their own people, and that's their Islamic problem in the western provinces. If they get too unruly, they will kill in the millions. I don't think they'll bat an eye. But outside their borders, I think they see a tremendous opportunity to drain resources and create trouble and make friendship with, for example, you touched on Sudan. They are there. They have done some ugly things in Sudan, and there's a horrible, you know, issue of basically genocide of people dying, you know, in the desert. It's a nasty, you know, turn of events. I'll give you another example. The Philippines. The Philippine government is usually in the military, which I've been there. I stationed there. I was in the hospital there when I was medevaced out. The Philippine government is very concerned oftentimes about domestic terrorism in the Philippines. To remind your listeners who are even older than I am, there was the Hukmanan communist insurgency in the Philippines in the 50s. So, needless to say, the People's Republic of China realized that they can really tie up assets in the Philippines by funding dissident terrorist groups. Now, they have a Now, the poor Philippine government has two problems. They have communist dissidents, and they have Islamic fundamental terrorists. So they have two parallel attacks at their core as a government. Why am I saying this? Because there's indicators that if these two groups ever join, that the Philippines will have a serious problem. Why is that important? Because when the Philippine government focuses inward, they can't put their army, their navy and air assets out into the Spratly Islands. It may sound like a reach. I've gone from terrorism and Islamic fundamentalism around the world and the People's Republic of China trying to support some of it, but I'm giving your listeners an exact example. If the Philippine government doesn't have the resources, because they're tied up domestically in protecting their rights to the Spratly Islands, they will lose oil and gas rights. The People's Republic of China are putting gun ports and boats out there because they think that's one of the largest untapped gas oil reserves left in the world.
Hold that thought there for just a moment, because we're going to have to bring all of our stations back on board right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Edward Timberlake, and of course his book is Showdown. And subtitled Why China Wants War with the United States. And we were simply talking to Mr. Timberlake about the fact that the Chinese Communist government has aligned itself with the Islamic terrorist movement throughout the world, and whether we're talking about the Islamic terrorist movement in certainly Al-Qaeda, or whether we're talking about the movement as it is in Africa and in so many countries there. I mean, certainly they're backing the thug Mugabe, who of course is the dictator of Zimbabwe. Incidentally, we did put him in power. Certainly they're working in Angola, and certainly this is one of the largest sources of oil there, and yet they're talking about it soon having 3 million Chinese communist people working in Angola.
Yes, sir. Their global reach will surprise you. There are some indicators that they're working very closely in our hemisphere with Hugo Chavez of Venezuela. You know, Castro has very few clients left, and I guess the People's Republic of China is somebody who'll trade with them. The bottom line is that their reach, the People's Republic of China, using whatever it takes, Hugo Chavez is not in any way, shape, or form, Islamic terrorist. He's just a thug, my personal opinion. And I have friends who live in Venezuela who are very worried about this guy and worried about their families. So they will take whatever works for them to work on our periphery, tie us up, drain resources, And ultimately, one of our scenarios, and our book has several wartime scenarios, one of our scenarios is, two of them actually, the small oil war and the big oil war. To remind your listeners, some of them probably follow this because, you know, California is very environmentally conscious, that Americans tend, according to the statistics I heard in the latest briefing, drink about 20 gallons of oil a year, and I mean that in a funny way. I mean, we use that amount of oil goes into keeping our quality of life alive, not just filling our cars, but manufacturing and producing things.
Now, is that 20 barrels or 20 gallons?
20 gallons.
20 what?
20 barrels per capita.
20 barrels per capita. Okay, fine.
Yes, sir, exactly. Not 20 gallons, no, sir. I do that in a couple of days when I do. No, 20 barrels.
Right.
I apologize for the misspeak. And the People's Republic of China are poking around at about a single barrel. Now, run the math. You look at a nation of 1.3 billion people. If they just come halfway up to our consumption, their demand for oil is going to be huge.
Well, you have something in your book. Talk about $230 a barrel for oil. That's almost, at least over tripling the current price. Do you really think it could get to that?
Yes, sir, I do. Actually, I really do believe that if things break against us, and we haven't brought Anwar online, and Chavez is good as his word to cut us off, they can really hurt us in our industrial base rather quickly.
You know, one of the things that really it really intrigues me is the fact that there's all sorts of oil and gas off the coast of Florida.
Yes, sir.
And of course, we've divided half of it to go to Cuba and half of it go to the United States, only we're not drilling in our half, but Communist China is drilling in Cuba's half. That
yes,
doesn't
sir.
Make sense. Why would we not be concerned that China is drilling, you know, in their half, and we're not going to allow it to be drilled in our half because it's, you know, it's environmentally unsound? That doesn't make sense.
No, sir, that does not make sense to me. I'll tell you one we won, but it's kind of a unique one. To remind your listeners, a while ago, one of the Chinese oil companies made a major run at one of our oil companies, Chevron. All our major oil companies have drilling rights off the American coast. They divide it up. And you know, some aren't allowed to drill in their area because of other laws or other restrictions. But had China been allowed to buy the American oil company, they would have gotten rights to drill.
That's a unical, of course.
Yes, sir. And they would have gotten rights to drill. Now, here it comes. They would then have been allowed to construct drilling platforms off the American coast. Now, all our evidence indicates whenever they do that, they really are listening posts and spy platforms. So, but then they could take a tax deduction. So not only would they buy our company, they could drill for our oil, they could put a spy base right off the coast of America, and then take a tax deduction. Thank God that deal was stopped.
Well, of course, but they really more or less control the port there in Long Beach and the United States. You know, certainly they're working all throughout Central America and the Bahamas. It's almost as if Communist China's encircling us today.
They are. They're going for what we call strategic choke points.
And where is the awareness, do you think? What is our government doing to counter them?
Well, as I said earlier, and I'm doing this as an author, Secretary Rumsfeld has driven a lot of the American military focus to analyzing, focusing on, thinking about, building up, acquiring the forces necessary to deter China in the Pacific. Tell them, don't even try. And very bluntly, the administration, again, I'm speaking as an author, the administration has made very, very good inroads in bringing Japan on board as a very tight friend of America and opening up India and making sure India is...
Hold that thought right there, please.
Yes, sir.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Edward Timberlake, and we're talking about the relationship between the United States and Communist China. And certainly, Edward has pointed out that, you know, we have certainly been able to bring the Japanese on board going along with us. And one of the things you mentioned is that the Japanese are going to begin to finance the Aegis anti-missile system. This is a system, it's an animalistic system based upon the Aegis cruisers. And so they're going to have this sort of a defense, a missile defense for Japan. but we don't have any similar defense for America. In other words, they're going to use our cruisers and our missile system and our technology to defend Japan, but it's not being allowed to defend America. I don't understand that.
Well, we're working that problem, sir, very bluntly. I think that the Missile Defense Agency and the administration deserves a lot of praise for trying to do some very hard physics. The mechanics and the physics and the rocketry and the telemetry and the microcircuitry are all very difficult challenges. I actually fired missiles from an F-4, and very bluntly, a lot of them didn't work. It's a very tough environment to operate in, and I think the trend is in the right direction. After all, I'll be very blunt. When I was analyzing the Clinton administration, they forced the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and I say that in a very forceful way, to go up and predict that he was testifying that we were watching North Korean missiles. And by gosh, we were so good that we could tell, and they were about 5 years out from launching anything important. Well, 3 weeks after the chairman at that point in the Clinton administration spoke, the North Koreans popped off a three-stage missile that plopped down north of Hawaii. So we really have to sense that we do need a missile defense, we do need good intelligence, we do also need deterrence. We also have to tell them, we're working to stop them if they're in flight, and we can watch them, unfortunately, and eventually we'll stop them. But we also have to tell them there'll be serious consequences, and maybe, just maybe, we can hold them off. We can convince the Taiwanese to buy the military items that I fought for when I was a staffer on the Hill. They gridlocked themselves a little bit in their purchases, and that's not good. Getting close to Japan is fantastic. And very bluntly, the rearranging of our forces in the Pacific, I think, have been strategically masterful in pulling some of our troops off the DMZ in Korea. That may sound strange, but it stops them from being just hostages and wiped out. I've been up on the DMZ. I actually walk in a building in Panmunjom where, when you stay in the building, you can walk into North Korea.
Hold that thought there for just a moment as we bring our other stations back online here. And once again, our guest is Mr. Edward Timperlake. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking about the book Showdown, and it's really going into the problems we have as far as Communist China. And Communist China is really full production for war. They're doing everything they can to build up a massive military, and of course, as Edward points out, China has no enemies. Why is China building up this massive military? Certainly nobody in the world in their right mind would be going to attack them. So a lot of the countries in the area surrounding communist China are really getting very worried. And, of course, one of the points that's made is that Japan is thinking about putting in an effective anti-ballistic missile system, and they're going to use our Aegis carriers to do that. And but, of course, we can't do that for the United States. We don't have any really effective anti-ballistic system. We had one back in the 70s that worked really quite well. We disbanded it. We haven't been able to figure out how to build another one. I don't know how we could have been so much smarter in the 1970s than we are now.
Well, our scientists and engineers are pretty good, and we're coming on strong again. And thank God you're having me on your radio show, because hopefully the way it works is that the American people are smart, and if they're informed, they will demand through the elected process that their leaders respond to threats as we describe them and see them. They have to see it for themselves, too. I mean, don't take my word for it. Read up on it. Look at it. Look at the numbers. Understand the history of the military operations in the Pacific. And hopefully they'll align with a very strong deterrence policy. I'm a Marine. I bombed the Khmer Rouge. I make no apologies for it. But my argument is, the stronger we are, the smarter we are, the more capable we are, the better we have a missile defense system, the better we can deter China, and they will crumble from within. I really, honest, my heart of heart, believe that. I think that I don't know how close they are to their last legs because of, as what you introduced the show with, all the money going over there. When they can produce the sneakers or Nikes for, what, $5 a pop or something like that, and retail them in America for $100, the balance of trade is going to heck. Now, I said I didn't mind Wheat and Beanie Babies, and I don't. But here's where it really gets ugly. When they get all that money, what do they do with it? They have what's called a 16-character policy. This is what they call it, 16 Chinese characters, which says that everything that comes into China is first and foremost adjudicated as an instrument of state national security? Does it help them? Where should it go? How should it be used? Then they, you know, then they have consumer issues that have nothing to do with that, of course. But their whole focus, first and foremost, is to allocate and direct resources towards, and this is where it gets really ugly, buying equipment from the Russians. I mean, I think the Russians are absolutely out of their mind selling the high-tech equipment they are to the Chinese, because they happen to share a border with them, too. And to remind your listeners, in 68, I believe it was, they actually had a war across one of the frozen rivers. So the Russian military is probably looking askance at the Russian masters in Moscow, who are selling their latest weaponry to the People's Republic of China. And it's not bad stuff. We can still beat it, but they're getting the Chinese are getting a lot of it. And when you have a lot, it's a big threat. So that's one of the big issues. The other one, of course, is that the Chinese government has used North Korea very effectively. My point is that we've oftentimes seen the diplomacy and the six-party talks, and we have to work with China so they can work with North Korea, because China is the solution to the North Korean craziness, which I will use that word. And very bluntly, I would like to turn that equation on its head and say that the People's Republic of China are using, they're the problem. They're fostering the bad behavior, or unleashing, or at least not controlling, this kind of strange ruler that has turned his country into a nasty, grass-eating, starving gulag. So, with nuke weapons, it's very, very dangerous out there right now, and my heart goes out to the Japanese, to the good South Koreans. They're flirting a little bit with the North, which scares me. The Philippines are in trouble. We talked about that. The Taiwanese should be buying weaponry. The overtures to Vietnam. In another life, in a different time, I volunteered as a board member to try and rebuild the elementary schools in Vietnam. That may sound strange. I'm a Marine again. But I was part of an organization that has so far to date rebuilt 20-some-odd schools, elementary schools in Vietnam as a symbol. We just built bricks and mortar. I'm no longer on the board. But it was a very big overture to try and make Vietnam enter into the nationhood of free and democratic countries. So we are working, America is working our way around the periphery of China as they are working their way around our periphery. Again, I will go back to one of my original statements. We really did make very solid, the Bush administration should be highly complimented, again, speaking as an author, for their overtures to India. That is a very important step. To tell your listeners, the race right now is China has a one-child policy government. They're very harsh, and they're holding their own at about 1.3 billion and a little bit climbing. The Indian population, the population of India, is a little over a billion, and they're projected as a democracy now to outpace and have a larger population than China. And very bluntly, a democratic India, vibrant and growing with the rule of law and transparency, I think the Indians have a lot to be proud of. So there are some rays of sunshine in this, but the ugly part of it, we put it in the book, there's a hair trigger, and why? We ask the fundamental question, why is China going to go to war with America? And I will give it the specific example that I hope a lot of your listeners haven't had, but they probably have sensed other people in the playground have when they were kids. There are certain bullies out there, a bully mindset that says, it is not just important that I win. It is equally important that you lose. And that bully mindset, I think, is entrenched in the rulers of Beijing in that they have to demonstrate that they can beat us somewhere. It may be a small dust-up, a brush-up here, or a quick exchange here, but eventually, when they take us on, and if we do not, a superpower has to win convincingly. We have to stop them. If we get to a draw, I think basically they will then send a signal, as you've talked about originally, that to the nations on their border, America it may not necessarily be the biggest Pacific power. They think we are, and a protector of democracy, and they may start to see us, our protection and our vision and our goal for humanity and the hearts of people to have freedom wane from that part of the world. And what will occur in the other way is the ruling might of what I really call a fascist government, not necessarily a communist government, because they've figured out the issue of kind of competitiveness and middle class servicing that allows them to buy off some of their masses with material goods as long as the middle class and the lower class do not complain about the thuggish and police state behavior in communist China, and they do monitor internet. They do monitor cell phones. They will put you in jail. They will chase you down if you're a reporter for First American rights. I mean, for First Amendment rights. And the worst thing they do, I think, is that they really understand that they're threatened by religion and freedom of thought. And I can go through litany after litany of underground churches, Protestant evangelical movements in China being threatened. A fake Catholic church was created. That is a very significant issue. I happen to be Roman Catholic, and I grew up going to St. Patrick's in New York. And when you create a fake Roman Catholic church, you know that they're concerned because they're trying to defuse what I think was one of the greatest forces in the world, which was Pope John Paul teaming up with Lech Walesa and Solidarity and taking down the Soviet Empire. The rules in Beijing, and I'm one of the few people in Washington, and they're angry at me on what I do, but I think they give me the respect because I give them respect as far as being capable of doing what they say they're going to do, which is build a military and control their people. They are very good at what they do. I don't mock them, and I don't call them a junkyard army or the million-man swim to Taiwan, which is what some of the other people have laughed and made jokes at what we call the blue team, those individuals here in Washington that have an informal alliance to say that maybe, just maybe, we really should stand up and be as blunt as we can to China and tell them to back off, back down, and don't screw with American interests in the Pacific, because we are on the side of freedom. As I started the conversation, we have a good system with good and bad people in it. They have a bad system with good and bad people in it. Our hearts are with the Chinese people who want freedom. And I'm tired of being accused of being anti-Chinese or having this crazy phobia against China. I'm not. I am very much in favor of the individual Chinese citizen, the student at Tiananmen, who's now a tank man. All your listeners, hopefully you can remember that. That was one of the most courageous portraits of the last century. I've never seen a man with so much courage. And to remind your listeners what I'm talking about, Tiananmen was a group of students in the leading squares like Times Square and the Miracle Mile and San Francisco, Ghirardelli Square, all in one. And the bottom line is they had a convoy or a column of tanks coming in, and a young man with shopping bags in his hand walked in front of the tank and stood there. And when the tank tried to move around him, he moved in front of the tank again. The column of tanks stopped. That was a single human being standing up to the might of a totalitarian fascist government, and that shot of that picture went around the world. And I just heard recently, and I think it may be true, that he survived that. But a lot of kids in Tiananmen didn't. As I said, they were machine gunned, and when their parents came to get the bodies, they were machine gunned also. That's a true story.
And of course, the thing that always bothered me about that whole issue, I remember it very well, because I was away at a meeting, and of course, we were all hoping that, George Bush, the first George Bush, George Herbert Walker, would certainly take retaliatory action against the ruthless, tyrannical, brutal people there. And instead of that, within 2 weeks, he had extended most favored nation trading status to communist China. And where was the outcry from the American people?
Well, actually, the way that really worked was that they had an MFN debate. The People's Republic of China was penalized for about a year. But finally, the MFN business was, this is where it really gets ugly. It was always on the Hill, and very bluntly, I don't know if your listeners, they're Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives, I have no idea, but I used to work for Chairman Jerry Solomon of the Rules Committee, Republicans from upstate New York, and his best ally against the People's Republic of China brutality was Nancy Pelosi. She was magnificent in standing with Chairman Solomon in the well of the House and making the exact point you're making. We reached across the aisle. Conservative Republicans and very liberal Democrats on human rights shook hands and said, yes, let's make an issue out of this. Let's stop it. We always lost that vote to the moneyed interest in the middle, the squishy middle, both parties. And that was a horrible thing because money uber Alice. They wanted the trade and they got their way by however you work money on the Hill. The bottom line is that the conservative right and the evangelical right and the hardcore freedom, loving left joined forces in condemning China every year until all of a sudden, before I left the Hill, actually, China got WTO accession, and that debate stopped because once that happened, there was no leverage to ever bash them again or point out their foibles, because now they're ritualistically inside trading relationships, and it just is on the merits of the trade itself.
And don't you think that was really a betrayal of the Chinese people doing that?
I think it was very ugly. I think it was a very ugly time. I really do. I really believe that the kids deserve better. I think that they had a magic moment where they stood up and they put their lives on the line. A lot of them lost it. And I think they earned a legacy that should have lasted a lot longer and with a lot more force than to go back to trade as normal. I was very disheartened by that.
How did you feel about the President Bush recently inviting this butcher from China to come over here, President Hu, whatever it is, I can't pronounce his name, but anyway, he was over here, and you know, and of course, you know, he gets all this publicity. Don't you think that's very disheartening to the people who want to be free back in China?
Well, in one respect, but there is an element here, and this is going to be strange for me. I think it was FDR that said, we will not fear to negotiate, but we will not negotiate out of fear. And I honestly have no problem with heads of state meeting each other, nor do I have problems, and this may sound strange, with senior military officers talking to one another, because the issue of a flashpoint is so great. What I had severe problems with, and we stopped it for a long time, was the military-to-military exchanges. Presidents can shake hands, and you know, you just understand that that's global diplomacy, and it does send a bad signal home to some of the people who are hoping for freedom. But where you really get in trouble, I think, is when you allow the mid-level military officers of the People's Republic of China to learn our tactics, our doctrine, how we do things. And the other one is that, and I started on this, and I'll go right back to it, because I know I'm talking maybe to just one, maybe I'll reach one internet entrepreneur. When the search engines are sold to China and they're used to track down journalists or people posting comments about freedom, that's using our brilliant technology, a lot of it from your part of the world, you know, Silicon Valley, to be instruments of state totalitarian control. And that's scary stuff. I was on radio talking about the issue of cellular telephones with a cellular telephone lobbyist. And he said, look how wonderful it is. We got cell phones in the hands of the Chinese peasants. They can talk to one another. And you know what? He was wrong. And here's why. The People's Armed Police, which is half their military, when Tiananmen broke out, could not maneuver around. They were scared to their core. As I said earlier, 400 cities erupted in addition to Beijing. Their command and control, or the way they communicate, was very weak. It was very, 1950s. Well, now, with the revolution in cellular contacts, revolution in internet protocols, and ISPs, the People's Armed Police can whip around that country, maneuver their battalions, march in, find dissidents, find people praying, find grandmothers in Falun Gong meditating and literally throwing them off a train when they do that. So we are giving them the instruments of control. So it's not only state policy where you have to at least meet the leaders because, you know, we're people and they're people, but where I do draw the line is when the business interests try and send a signal that they're really doing it for the good of the freedom of the Chinese people, when they're putting blinders on to the consequences of some of their actions and the use of some of their technologies. We're shame on them.
And of course, we're acting within this last week or two. We're going to send one of our chief scientists over there, government official, knows all about nuclear energy, because we're going to help them build, I think, five nuclear power plants. In fact, we're even going to guarantee the loans on that from the Export-Import Bank. Why are we building up the nuclear capability of China? Were we so concerned about the nuclear capability of Iran?
Well, for one thing, China already has the capability to build many, many nukes and put them on many MIRV missiles. And we still have the wonderful window of opportunity. Not wonderful, I mean not in a great sense, but a wonderful of opportunity to stop Iran, which has to be done, by the way. But the Chinese missile launch capability and miniaturization from all the spy cases and things like that, unfortunately, this is a cliché. But that horse may be way out of the barn, galloping over the hill, and now we have to build up our forces, as you said, missile defense, to live and accept the consequences of very bad decisions in the last decade.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to just have just a few more minutes here with Mr. Timberlake. But anyway, do you have a website or anything you'd like to get out? Because we're going to be selling the book.
No, sir. It's Amazon for Showdown. They can go right to Amazon and put in Showdown. And they'll see a picture of a Chinese bead. It's a very tough picture.
I'm looking at him right now.
Shooting at you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and here our guest is Mr. Edward Timberlake, and a fascinating book, Showdown, and a lot of great information. The points you make very well is that, you know, Sydney and Taiwan should be buying more in the way of military equipment, but my understanding is, you know, they've got something like 700, over 700 missiles on the mainland aimed at Taiwan, and we're not selling them a lot of things. They want to buy a lot of things for the defense, and we won't sell it to them. Is that true?
No, actually, I met with the president of Taiwan. I've been over there. I've been in their ready rooms with their fighter pilots. I'm here to tell you the Taiwanese fighter pilots are first class. They are some of the best stick and throttle guys. I mean, they're courageous young men and ready to go and fight and die for their country. I'm taking nothing away from them. I met the Taiwanese Marine Corps. They're tough. Their army is tough. The Taiwanese are fighters. Where I'm concerned about, though, is when we're on the Hill in the 90s, we fought very hard for the Taiwanese to buy upgraded systems. Now, they complained, and rightfully so, that we weren't willing to sell them top-of-the-line stuff, Aegis perhaps, or the Clinton administration wouldn't move the AMRAAM missile in. But the bottom line is, where I'm very concerned is, we went to the mat, and I've been to the mat on this one, to get them to have a submarine fleet. I think that's critical for them. If the Taiwanese had a sub-fleet, the Chinese Navy would go to the bottom of Davy Jones's locker on the first day of hostilities, because our Los Angeles-class submarines, coupled with some Taiwanese submarines, would take them out. They have every right to buy that. It has been tied up in all kinds of engineering and purchasing discussions now, I guess, for 5 or 6 years. So the Taiwanese really do need a cold dose of reality that they better start putting some money where the American legislative body said they could buy equipment. And even if they want to complain they don't have the state-of-the-art, we'll at least start buying and working their way up towards it, and they haven't been doing that. So there's an issue there. On the signal that it's being sent, well, the missiles you talk about, you're right, about 790 actually, those intermediate-range missiles can keep our carriers, out of harm's way. I mean, that's the problem. John Paul Jones, you know, the father of the U.S. Navy, said, give me a fast ship, for I intend to go in harm's way. That's our motto. We take the carrier task forces, battle groups, and fight the enemy.
Edward, I would love to keep on going. In fact, we could probably go for a couple of hours, but I'm sure it's getting late back there, and besides that, we're out of time. But I want to thank you so very much for being with us. I hope maybe we can get you onto some of our other programs. We do actually 5 hours of talk radio to four different audiences every day. But thank you so very much for being with us, and thank you for writing this book.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be on your show, Doctor.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right, fine. And our guest has been Mr. Edward Timberlake, and a fascinating book. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've been interviewing the author of Showdown, Why China Wants War with the United States. This is written by a man who's working very hard at what's going on in Washington, D.C., and he will tell you things in this book that you will never read in your controlled media, and you're not going to get from the pundits who are both controlled, both right and left, conservative, liberal, Republican, Democrat, it's all controlled. And there's a lot of good information here. Now, there are other forces at work, and that's the spiritual forces that are energizing this whole situation. But let me suggest you get and order the book, Showdown. We're going to be carrying it because we think it's an important book. Showdown with by Edward Timberlake and Zed Babin, who is Assistant Deputy Secretary of Defense. And believe me, that's one of the key positions in our government. I mean, that's about two men down from the Secretary of Defense. Very knowledgeable. And, of course, you have to understand that the Red Chinese, who were giving all this money and lending all this money to and guaranteeing their loans, they're funding Al-Qaeda. And he brings that out. Why are we backing the people who are funding Al-Qaeda? And there's so many unanswered questions today. Well, if you'd like to get this book, if you'd like to have it, you'd like to read it, like to show it to other people, this is what you have to do, is give them the information and let them understand that nothing is as it appears to be. Showdown by Edward Timberlake and Jeb Bavin is available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. You need the facts to help people understand what's really going on. Now, for those of you out there in the listening audience, you know, if you haven't got a copy of our health catalog, you need to get it, but you need to get some of the books. Do you realize, of course, that almost every American today is magnesium deficient because we're not eating the green leafy vegetables that we used to, and the green leafy vegetables are not picking it up from the soil. And I will tell you that magnesium is one of the most essential minerals we have out there. I know both my wife and I are taking it, and it affects every part of your body, whether it be your mood, whether it be your heart, whether it be your muscles, people with restless legs or leg cramps and things of that sort. And of course, you have to be very careful with the sort of magnesium supplements you get. So many of them are magnesium aspartate, and if you don't know what that is, that's aspartic acid. And of course, it's a derivative going right back to Nutrasweet aspartame, which of course really is an excitotoxin and a poison. So if you don't know what you're getting, we've actually gone over all the various items we're carrying, and we recommend people really very seriously consider getting the magnesium. I know since I've been taking it, I noticed my pulse, which used to actually have skip beats because of hyperirritability, my pulse is a lot better. Will it help you? Well, you really need, I think, to realize you need to get the information. We have a great book by Dr. Carolyn Dean on magnesium. And then, of course, you need, of course, to seriously think about that. If you'd like, of course, to get a health catalog, why give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And we carry all of the standard things that you really need for your health, whether it would be high-dose vitamin D, and you're not going to get it in simply a little capsule. You need the vitamin D supplement, which actually helps to combat infections. I mean, if you need vitamin D for a good immune system, and unless you're getting out in the sun or taking supplements, you're not going to get adequate vitamin D. So many things that you're not going to be told, and your doctor really doesn't know. For instance, vitamin C. I went to a meeting 2 weeks ago at the Fairmont Hotel in San Francisco, up on the top of Nob Hill, and they were saying, oh, you know, you shouldn't have more than 55 or 75 milligrams of vitamin C. Actually, you need 1,000 to 2,000 a day. You need to be taking it because it helps your immune system. It helps every aspect of your body. But if you want more information, give us a call. We'd be glad to send you a catalog. 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free newsletter, we'd be glad to send it to you. Of course, we really hope many of you will join the Radio Liberty family and help us so we can maintain our opportunity to talk to people on 60 stations every week. With your help, we can continue. Please pray for America, pray for revival, pray for our leaders and ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty. Our webpage, www.radioliberty.com. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.